Now we're holding on Samach Beis Amud Aleph, the third line. We were talking about yesterday the whole issue of you have an Am HaOretz who is not careful about Tumah B'Tahara. What are the dinim in terms of depositing food by them for safekeeping, and what are the dinim in terms of assisting them with preparing food? Where on the one hand, so we have to a certain extent, you're allowed to lend them kalim, for example, because of Davkei Shalom. To a certain extent, we said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to help them with, for example, preparing dough until the water actually touches it, at which point it's makabel tumah. So now, continuing on that topic of what you're allowed and not allowed to do with an amaretz. So the Gemara says, Hey, Rav Yosi HaMeshulam. Mishum Rabbi Yochanan Ochiv, Sha'ama Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma. Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam testified in front of the Chachamim in the name of his brother Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan in turn had said the following in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Chisma. Mentions on the side over here, by the way, the word ben may not belong over here. In Pirkei Avos also, you have at the end of Perek Gimel, you have where it mentions Rabbi Eliezer Chisma. So there actually you have some sidurim, including Tilos Hashem, have the word ben in parenthesis, because in fact, it may not be, that his father's name was Chisma. It may be his name is Rabbi Eliezer Chisma. In other words, Chisma is a nickname for him. Or some a nickname or almost like a last name or something, whatever. Anyway, the point is, so Rabbi Yosi ben Amishulam is saying Eidus on the following din. Ein oisin chalas am ha'oretz b'tahara. Now you have like this. Sometimes you would have a person has a batch of dough. They wouldn't always necessarily, a person has flour and water they need to make into dough. They're not always necessarily going to do it themselves. Sometimes they would hire somebody to prepare the dough for them. That somebody who you hire is called a gabal, which means a kneader. So here we're talking about, suppose that the gabal is a chaver, so he's careful about Tumah B'Tahara, and Am HaOretz wants to hire him to prepare his dough B'Tahara. So now what happens is, so now the Am HaOretz says to the gabal, look, I've already prepared I already have a batch of dough, which I started preparing. I want you to finish it, and I want you to take challah from it. Then the chover should not do that. So Rashi says, because look, at that point already, it's already become tome by the Am HaOretz. So now when the gabel takes off challah from it, a koyin is going to think, hey, well, a gabel who was a chover took off challah. It must be tahor. I can go ahead and eat it. And he's not going to realize that it's tome because midrabanan, everything that an Am HaOretz touches is tome. So you can't do that. If the Am HaOretz already began the process of making the dough and got it to the point where it was wet, where then, as we said in the Mishnah, it's makabel tumah at that point, then the gabel is not allowed to get involved at that point. Tosfos says that no, it's not that, because if it was just a matter of that, there would be a way you could take a different batch of dough and designate a piece of that and use that as challah, and it would work, and that way you have challah that's tahor to give to the kohen. Rather, Tosfos says what it is it's one, the whole reason in general, really, the Chachamim would say, why are you a chaver getting involved in preparing food for an Am HaOretz at all, where his food is tamei? It's one thing, the Chachamim are going to allow it, as we're going to say soon in the Gemara, Mishum Kedei Chayav de Gabal, because we have to allow the Gabal has to be able to make a living, and therefore we allow him to do things which would normally be also Dirabbanan, and we give him a break and we allow him to do it. But here, how much is the Am HaOretz already going to be paying him for just taking off a piece of challah? Not very much. So we're not going to allow it, Mishum Kedei Chayav Shogabal. It's not really worth it, the amount that he's going to get paid for anyway. As opposed to, and then there is the concern, after all, that the Am HaOretz will touch the challah after it was designated. Which Tosfos Yeshanim adds, you know, we learned yesterday about saying that you can deposit Truma for safekeeping by Yisrael Am HaOretz. That's different. That's not his Truma. So therefore, he's going to be afraid to touch it. But here, the challah comes from his dough. So he may not be afraid to touch it, even if you designate it from a different piece. So therefore, the Chachamim aren't going to allow it no matter what. As opposed to when you're getting paid for making the whole batch of dough from scratch, then that's a significant amount of pay. Then the Chachamim are going to allow it. Kedei Chayav Shogabal, because and the gabbal is going to have to arrange to do it in a way that it's not going to become tummy. So Rabbi Yossi ben Amisholim continues. Avol osin isas chulav b'tara. You can make his dough, which is chulin b'tara, meaning, in other words, that the gabbal is being involved from the beginning. It's not that the Amoritz first prepared the dough and then he calls on the gabbal just to designate challah from it. Here, to begin with, the gabbal is working on it from when it's able to be mekabel tumah. So that you're allowed to do. The noitel hemena kedei challah. So then the gabbal, after he finishes preparing the dough, he takes out of it a piece, the appropriate size of challah. And then what he does is he puts that piece of challah, which remember has to stay tahor. We have to be careful that the amoritz doesn't make it tameh. So he puts it in a kfisha or an anchusa. Rashi explains that these are both kalim made out of worn out pieces of that used to be. These are things that used to be skin bags, that used to be bags made out of leather that were used for holding liquids or things like that. Now they're worn out. You don't normally put, they're not makabel tuma anymore. And they're not things that you would normally put dough in. And that way there'll be a hecker for the amoritz not to touch it. There's different other opinions among the mafarshim, what a kfisher and anchosa are exactly. A different explanation is that they're pshute clay. Tosfos says, Tosfos learns that kfisha v'anchusa are pshute clay eights. Not like Rashi, who says they're pieces from leather bags that are worn out. Tosfos says they're wooden kalim that have no receptacle. They're not makabel tuma. And there's a different explanation that they are, in fact, kalim that are makabel tuma, but the chaver was careful to toivel them first. Anyway, uchshaba amoritz lito. So now when the amoritz comes to pick up his dough and the challah, and then he's going to give the challah to the kohen. Notelas shtehen. He takes all of them. He takes the challah. He takes the rest of the dough and the challah and the keli that it's in. The enichoshesh and the gabbal does not have to be concerned that the amoritz is going to touch it for reasons that we're going to explain in a few lines in the Gemara. So that the chachamim allowed to do. So here you've worked it out in such a way that so far, until the challah was separated, it hasn't become tameh, and you're putting the challah now into a kfisha or anchusa, which are not makabel tumah, or if they are, then you already toveled them, and you're making sure, as the Gemara is going to explain in a little bit, that the amoritz is not going to touch the challah, because you tell him something that's going to prevent him from touching it, as we'll see soon. So therefore that works, and that the Chachamim allowed the gabbal to do so that he can make a living and not have to depend exclusively on chaverim for his livelihood, because then he wouldn't be able to make a living. So that's one example. Another example, the Ein. Now let's turn to another kind of thing. Now you have another kind of concern where also you have a matter of tumah v'tahara as far as tumah. And again, you have a problem where you have a chaver who may be doing something for a living and you need to balance him being able to make a living with the dinim of tumah v'tahara. So similarly, ve'ein oisin tumas zeisav v'tahara. Similarly, an amoretz has olives that he wants to be able to give tumah from, and the tumah should remain tahar to give to the kohen. So again, you'll have a professional called a badod who deals with olives, who deals with the pressing of olives, and among others, takes truma from them. So a chover would not be allowed to take truma from it and do it patara for the same reason, because the olives have already become mukshal kabel truma. What happens is the processing of olives involves after they're picked. The first thing you do, you take the olives and you put them in a keli called a ma'aton, which is like a large bucket or something like that, where they sit there for a while, and the little juice oozes out of them while they're tightly packed in there, and that helps soften them up so that later on, when you're going to go press them, you'll get more oil out of them. Well, that oil that oozes out, that juice that oozes out of them, is machshir them l'kabel tumah. So by the and meanwhile, the amoritz has been touching them. So by the time the chover comes into the picture, the amoritz has already made them tumah. You have the same problem. According to Rashi, the problem is that the kohen is going to see that the badad is taking tumah, and think that this truma is tahor because he's going to figure a chaver, of course, knows what he's doing and it's tahor, and he's not going to realize that the Amma Oretz already previously made it tamei. And according to Tosfos, the word is that that since the pay for taking truma is not going to be very much anyway, then the Chachamim are not going to allow the Badab to do it unless if he's doing the whole job and there he's getting a significant amount of pay, then the Chachamim will allow it because of Kedei Chai. So similar point. But the badad can be involved preparing the olives when they're still chulin, before he before truma is ever taken from them. Then the badad can be involved to begin with, because then at that point they haven't become tamei yet. The noitel haymena kedei truma. So now what the Bada does is he sets aside an amount for truma. Umanicha bekelev shochover. He puts it in kalim that now on the face of it, kalim shochover means kalim that belong to the chover. So the Gemara is going to ask later on, why does he need to put it in kalim of the chover? Why can't, as long as they're kalim that are not makabel truma, like the so Tosfos says, okay, kfisha or anchusa, we're not going to use for olives because they're not really suitable. Tosfos learns that kfisha van chusa are flattened wooden kalim. You can't really use those for olives. You can use those for dough because it's a mass, it'll stick together. You can't really use it for olives. So therefore, fine, it's not mentioning kfisha van chusa. But the question still remains, why does the keli need to belong to the chaver? Can it be? There could be a type of keli, as we'll see later, that is not makabel truma and that belongs to the amor. So we'll take up that point later. Anyway, so you put in a keli of the chaver, which is tahor, uchshaba amoritz lito, when the amoritz comes to take the truma, to give it to the kohen, no jealous shein, he takes both of them, he takes the truma with the keli that it's in, and there's no concern that he's going to touch the truma, as the Gemara will explain soon why not. Rashi also mentions, by the way, and we learned this in Tosfos as well yesterday, that even though midrabanan amoritz are considered tamei, but we don't go to the extent of considering them like zavim to say that anything that they carry will be without touching will become tamei. So we're not worried about that. Therefore, in the first case with the dough, the amoretz touches the kfisha or anchosa, but that's no problem because not makabel truma. In the second example, we're going to see later, the Gemara is going to explain what kind of keli this is, in the case of the olives, that we won't have a problem of that. The Amoritz touching it won't be metameit. He won't touch the truma or the challah inside it for reasons that we're going to explain soon. And as far as the Amoritz carrying it, that the Chachamim to begin with did not make the gzera that an Amoritz that carries anything is metameit, because that the Chachamim figured that's going too far. That's a gzera shein rei vatzibur yecholim lamed, while people are not going to be able to manage with such a gzera. Okay. So we have two dinim that Rabbi Yossi ben Amashulam said, one about making dough and one about processing olives. So why do we need both of them? The Gemara says, "Utzricha." We need to be told in both cases. De'iashmin and gabal, if we were only told in the case of the kneader of dough, you would say, "Mishum d'loy nafish agre." You know what? He doesn't make very much money as it is. How much already are people gonna pay him to make the dough for him? So he's poor. So he needs to be able to make a living wherever he can. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to give him a break and allow him to do this processing for the Amoretz, as long as it's done in a way that he's careful about Tumah V'Tahara. Ava Bada D'Nafish Agre. But on the other hand, an olive presser who is paid a lot of pressing olives. First of all, you have a lot of olives, you have a large olive crop, and second of all, processing olives is a lot more of a labor intensive and a lot more specialty task. So therefore, a person gets paid a decent amount for that. So Badad Rapashtus makes a decent living. Amaloi, so maybe the Chachamim wouldn't give him that break and allow him to prepare anything for the Amoritz at all. Maybe we'd tell them, look, get your customers exclusively by Chaverim, or if you want to have Amoritz as customers, then make sure you toivel them and their kalim first and whatever, and do that whole process. So therefore, we need to be told by the Badad as well. The Iyashmin and Badad, on the other hand, if we were only told by the Badad, you would say, Mishum de la Shriachle. You would say, on the other hand, a Badad, yes, he makes a nice amount of money for his work helping with the processing of olives, but it's only an annual thing. It's only once a year. There's an olive harvest, and therefore, that's his season. The rest of the year, he has very little to do. I have a gabel de Shriachle, but the gabel has work all year round because people prepare dough all year round. Emaloi, so you would think that not. Tzricha, so therefore we need to be told in both cases, both by the gabel, who's making very little money for each job, and by the badar, who's making a lot of money for each job, but only during a certain season of the year, by both of them, the Chachamim gave them a break and allowed them to do work for an Am HaOretz as long as they do it in the way that we describe, where they're doing the processing from the beginning and put the challah or the truma in a keli and so on and so forth. Okay, so now Omamar, so now we said in the Braisa, we said that you take the challah from the dough, you put it in a kfisha or an anchosa, and then when the ma'aretz comes to pick it up, then he can pick up the challah with the keli, and there's no chashash, there's no concern, because the keli is not makabel truma. Well, the question is, fine, the keli is not makabel truma, isn't there the concern, though, that the ma'aretz may touch the actual challah itself? What's to prevent him from touching the challah that's inside the keli? Again, as Tosfos Yeshanim said before, it's one thing if you had truma of your own that you were mafkid by an Am HaOretz, an Yisrael, then fine. Since Yisrael, Am HaOretz, is not, he knows that truma is off limits to him, so therefore he's not going to touch it because it's not for him to eat, and it's yours that you deposited with him. But here it comes from his dough, after all. As far as he's concerned, the Am HaOretz doesn't consider himself Tomei. Only we, Chaverim, consider him Tomei. So what's going to prevent him from touching the dough before he gives it to the Kohen? And then the Kohen's going to receive it, think that it's Tahar, and it's not. The answer is, the answer is that we, meaning in this case, the Gabel tells the Am HaOretz, Chazi, pay attention, e nogas ba, if you touch this dough, hodra l'tivla, it will go back to being tevel. Now, the whole point is, the Am HaOretz was one of the Am HaOretz who's careful with challah. Now, not all of them are. The same way as we learned yesterday, that only Roiv Am HaOretz ma'aser n'hein, most Am HaOretz take ma'aser, but there's a significant minority that don't. Well, the same way, you have Am HaOretz who are not careful about challah. This one obviously is. He's just not careful about Truma Vatara. So we tell him, if you touch this piece, then it will go back to being tevel. Now, on one level, that can mean, obviously, that's not true. It's not going to go back to being tevel. It's still, the piece is still separated from the rest of the dough. So therefore, it's just kind of an empty threat. But the Am HaOretz, not knowing better, will think that it's a genuine threat and he'll be afraid to touch it. On the other hand, the Chassam Sofer says maybe it could be an actual serious, it could be an actual credible threat. The Chachamim have the ability to say maybe that if the Am HaOretz touches the dough, then retroactively it should be considered that the taking of challah was not valid, and therefore that the dough is tevel after all, and now the Am HaOretz is also to eat it unless he takes challah from it again. So it could be not just an empty threat, but a genuine one, and therefore so that'll prevent him from touching it. So the Gemara asks, why? The Am HaOretz may say, I don't care. What do I care if my dough goes back to being tevel? The answer is, the whole point is he was trying to fix up his dough. That's why he called in the gabel in the first place. Otherwise, he would have just prepared the dough himself and taken the challah himself. Do you think that he would care if it goes back to tevel? Of course he would care that it goes back to being tevel. Therefore he's not going to want to touch the challah, and therefore that way he can deliver the challah safely to the kohen, and it remains tahor, and the kohen will be able to eat it. Okay. Now, in the case of the olives, in the case of the olive pressing, we said, we said he takes out from the olives, or more likely actually from the oil, he takes out enough for truma and puts it in a keli belonging to the chaver. And the same thing we said, when the Am HaOretz comes to pick it up, he can pick up the truma inside the keli and there's no concern. You have the question again. Again, don't you have the problem that he may touch the truma, that he may touch the oil? Now, b'shleima hosim islay hekera. Now, at least in the case of the challah, you can say there is a heker. The fact that the chaver put the challah into a kfisha or an anchosa, which again, according to Rashi, are worn out pieces of leather kalim, and according to Tosfos, and I think the Rambam holds the same way as well, they're flat wooden kalim. So therefore, there's a heker. You don't usually put dough on such things. So that'll remind the Am HaOretz that he told the chaver he's not going to touch it. Ella, not Hocha Mai Hakera Islay, but over here, when it comes to the oil, what hecker is it? Just the fact that the keli belongs to the chaver rather than to the Amma Oretz is not going to be enough for the Amma Oretz to remember to not touch the oil. So leaving aside, fine, you can tell them if you touch the oil or go back to being tevil, but never mind that. The point is, there's the threat of that, but what's to prevent him just from forgetting and touching it? The answer is the manachle b'klei golden b'klei avonim b'klei adam. Because what it does is he doesn't just put it in regular kalim, he puts it in klei glolim, which are kalim made out of dried animal dung. Such things are not makabel truma. Or klei avonim, or kalim made out of stone, which are also not makabel truma. Or klei adama, or kalim made out of unfired earthenware. None of those three are makabel truma. So therefore, so the chaver puts the oil into such a keli, and therefore, so now Rashi points out if the amaretz touches the keli is not makabel truma. As far as the dough or as far as the oil itself, he's not used to using such kalim because such kalim, in fact, tend to be used only by chaverim precisely for the reason that they're not makabel truma. Amaretz, who are not careful about truma batara, are not usually used to using such kalim. So therefore, that'll be a hecker for him to not touch the contents of the keli and the keli itself. He's not matame because such kelim are not makabel truma. So the Gemara asks, "Yehochi my irya de chover." In that case, then why do you need to mention that the keli belongs to the chover? Afilu de ama oretz nami. And if the ama oretz happens to have a clay glolim or clay avonim or whatever, wouldn't that work too? And the answer is, you're right. That is what the Braisa means. When it says a keli of the chaver, doesn't mean that the keli has to belong to the chaver. It just means, it has to be the kind of keli that an amaretz may own the keli, but it's the kind that a chaver is able to use, namely that it's not makabel tuma, and therefore there's no concern that it ever became tome by the amaretz or by anybody in his household, and therefore now the chaver can use it to put the oil into that he designated as truma and give it to the amaretz to bring to the kohen, and there's no problem because the keli itself is not makabel tuma from the amaretz touching it. The fact that he's carrying it, as we said before, Rashi and Tosfos both explain that the chachamim were never gozer to begin with, that an amaretz carrying something is going to be matameh, only if, let's say, his wife, when she's a nida, were to carry it, then she would be matameh, but we're not concerned about that. It's also a heker because an amaretz does not regularly use such kelim. And as far as the contents of the keli, we warn him that if you touch it, it's going to go back to being tevil, and therefore he won't touch it. So that way you've covered all your bases. And again, the chachamim are allowing this kind of thing in order to make it possible for a gabal or a badad to make a living. And therefore the chachamim will allow him, as long as he takes these precautions, then everything of Tumah V'Tahara is taken care of, and therefore the chachamim will allow it. Then we said in the Mishnah, and so we got into that whole discussion, of course, because the Mishnah had told us about an Eishes Chaver helping out an Eishes Amaretz with preparing her food, and to what extent is she allowed and not allowed to help her. So now the Mishnah had continued, other things that are allowed, Mipnei Darkei Shalom. That we said was an example of Mipnei Darkei Shalom in order to promote peace between one Yid and another, because if the chaver can't help out the amaretz at all, then it's going to make it the amaretz are really going to hold it against the chachamim. So now, other examples in the Mishnah where we said things that are allowed in Darkei Shalom. We said machzikin yedei akum b'shvius. We're allowed to support goyim who are working the land during shvius. Now the Gemara is assuming at this point that helping them machzikin means to actually help them, to assist them with the work they're doing. So the Gemara says, "Machzikin." What do you mean, help them? You're not allowed to help if you have a goy who's working on his field in Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah, and he's digging in the ground, for example. You can't help him with that digging on Shvius because he may be allowed to do it, but you're not allowed to do it. And by the way, Rav Dimi Bar Sheshna says another din. This one applies all the time, not just during Shvius. The in Koflin Shalom la'ovd gechavim. You don't repeat the word Shalom when you're talking to a goy. In other words, the whole point that you're allowed to say Shalom to him is because of Darkei Shalom. So for that, you only need to say it once. You don't need to say it twice. Now, there are Rishonim who explain that that's only when you're using the word Shalom itself, because Shalom is a name of Hashem, so it's not really appropriate in the first place to use it regarding a goy. So they're butting the cape, but Mipnei Daka Shalom, the Chachamim allowed it, but not to say twice. According to that, for example, saying hello or something like that wouldn't be an issue because that is not a shame of Hashem. So according to that, it would be more an issue if you're, for example, in Israel where everybody says Shalom, so then you wouldn't be able to say it twice to a goy. On the other hand, the Meiri has an explanation that the reason why not to say twice Shalom to him is because that creates too much intimacy, too much closeness between a Yid and a goy. And then you may end up becoming too friendly with him and learning from his ways. So then according to that, then it might be an issue even with saying hello twice. Anyway, the point is that Rav Dimi Bar Sheshna is telling us that if a goy is digging in his field on Shvius, for example, you're not allowed to help him with that or any other agricultural work. So what do you mean, machzikin, that you'd be allowed to help them? Now, Tosfos points out there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that implies that there are cases where a Yid is able to do work in a field during Shemitah. And in fact, Rashi learns over there that the case is the Yid was hired by a goy. Tosfos says, based on our Gemara over here, it seems that not. But you have a case, for example, where a person has to pay X amount in taxes to the king. So then there's sakonas nefashis. If you don't pay it, the king, the government is not going to accept the excuse that it's Shemitah and I can't. And Tosfos gives several other possibilities. Maybe it's only when Shvius is derabanan, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, there can be hatarim for it, but it's not so simple. You do find, by the way, in Jewish history, there were times, for example, Josephus tells us when Alexander the Great conquered Eretz Yisrael, he obviously they're going to have to pay him taxes from now on instead of to the Persians, but he specially exempted the Jews from taxes during Shemitah because he knew that because they told him that they're not going to be able to work the land during Shemitah. So in different times in Jewish history, the Goyish authorities did that, but there were times when they didn't. And therefore, those were times when the Chachamim would allow, because of the Pikuach Nefesh, when the Chachamim would have to allow Jews to work the land during Shemitah. Anyway, the point is, so we're getting back to the Gemara over here. So we're saying, again, that the Mishnah had said machzikin, which presumably means that you're allowed to help them with their work. But then Rav Dimi Bar Sheshna is telling us in the name of Rav that you can't. The answer is, loitzricha lememra lehu achzuku ba'alma. The answer is yes, but what the Mishnah means, what the Mishnah is coming to tell us, is just you're allowed to tell them good job or be strong or something like that. Ki hod Rabbi Yehuda amalahu achzuku. Rabbi Yehuda would say to them just that. Rabbi Yehuda, if he saw a goy working his land during Shemitah, he would tell them achzuku, be strong, like techzak niyadechem, do a good job. Rav Sheshes, Amalahu Ashauta, Rav Sheshes would tell them a Lashon of Ashauta, which is also a Lashon of being strong, like he would tell them congratulations or good job or something like that. Tosfos brings a different thing from the Yerushalmi, that it would mean, according to the Yerushalmi brings two opinions. One is that to a goy, you're allowed to tell them, I see you plowing your field. Do a good job of it. Do a very good plowing. And next year, after Shemitah, I will be interested in buying this field from you. So like you're encouraging him to do the best possible job with the promise that eventually you're going to want to buy the field from him. So you would be allowed to do that. If you see a Yisro, you say to him, not doing Shemitah, he's working during Shemitah, but in general, you see a Yid working, then you say to him, Yishar, like you should be strong. And then the Yerushalmi brings another opinion, a goy, you're only allowed to say Yishar, a Yisrael, you can say Shalom Aleichem. So that would mean, Tosfos says, now the Yerushalmi evidently is disagreeing with our Gemara that says that you're allowed to say Shalom once to a goy, but not twice. The Yerushalmi is implying that you can't even say Shalom once to a goy. But the Yerushalmi is also saying that when we're saying machzikim yedei nochem v'shvius v'sholem v'shloimam, not like we're saying over here in the Bavli, that these are two different dinim. Number one, you're allowed to strengthen him, meaning we said verbally during shvius, and number two, any other time you're allowed to say sholem. According to the Yerushalmi, the two things are really one. In shvius, you're allowed to tell him an expression that says that to plow it very well, do a good job, and next to you, I want to buy it from you after shvius. And that was so it amounts to the same thing. You're being sholem to shloimam, you're asking after his welfare with the intention of actually buying from him later on. Okay. So that's what it means. Anyway, getting back to the Bavli over here, getting back to the Gemara. So that's what it means that when I'm saying that you support Goyim doing Shemitah, it means that you congratulate them and you say to them, good job, or expressions like that. Now, we said, Be'en Koflin Shalom Lo'ovit Gechavim, you don't repeat Shalom to a Goy. So the Gemara points out how different Chachamim dealt with that issue. Rav Chista Machtim B'Yoyv Lahu Shlomo, Rav Chista would initiate the greeting. When he met a Goy, he would initiate the greeting before the other guy does. Because that way, if they, the idea was back then, the understanding was that if you meet somebody and then you say whoever initiates, so you have one person would initiate the greeting, would say hello, for example, the other one would suppose to, it was the polite thing to respond with something bigger. So now if the goy says shalom first, then Rav Chista will be forced to say something more back, which might include saying twice shalom, or according to the Me'iri, twice of any kind of hello, and that would be a problem. So therefore, Rav Chista would initiate the greeting first. That way, he only has to say shalom, and that way he's not being over on what we're saying over here. Rav Kahana, Omalei Shlomo Lamar, Rav Kahana, when he would meet a goy, he would say the expression Shlomo Lamar, peace to the Mar, to the Rebbe. Now, what does that mean? Rashi explains that he wasn't actually really meaning to address the Goy at all. A Goy is not Mar. A Goy is not a ruler over the Jewish people. So it means that in his heart, he was thinking of his Rebbe, that he's saying Shalom to his Rebbe. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because it's still Gnevas Das. It's still, you're misleading the Goy. You're making him think that you're showing respect to him, and really you're not. So rather, Tosfos says it just means that he would say Shlomo Lamar, and that way he would avoid having to say twice Shalom, because the idea would be, in other words, other Mephoshim explain what Tosfos means is by saying Shlomo Lamar, that way the even if Rav Kahana was not the first one to greet, even if the other guy said Shalom first, but Rav Kahana is replying Shlomo Lamar even only once, then that would be enough. The goy would be appeased by that, and he doesn't require that. He's not going to consider it impolite that Rav Kahana is not saying twice Shalom. So it worked out that way. Marsha over here refers to something that he says in Gemara Brachas. There's a Gemara Brachas that says that if you greet a person, if the Gemara says it, if you greet a person and he doesn't reply Shalom, then in fact, by the way, the Marshal says about this that what he would say Shlomo Lamar, meaning in other words, he would say individually to each goy that he saw Shlomo Lamar, rather than this way he doesn't have to say it twice to any one goy, or he might even be, it means like he would see a group of goy, he would say Shlomo Lamar to all of them generically, rather than having to say Shalom to each one individually. Anyway, Marshal refers to something he says in Brachas. The Gemara says over there that if one person greets another and the other one doesn't respond, then he's called a goyzel. It's like he's stealing from the first person the fact that he had an opportunity to give him a bracha and he didn't. So Marsha says over there, therefore, that's why Rav Chista in particular is saying in our Gemara was with a yid, he wouldn't necessarily initiate the greeting first, because what if the yid doesn't respond? Then Rav Chista has caused him to be a gazlan. On the other hand, with a goy, Rav Chista doesn't care about that, so therefore he'll go ahead and initiate the greeting first. This way he wanted to say shalom twice, but this way also, if the goy doesn't respond, if the goy wants to be a gazlan, big deal, that's not Rav Chista's problem. Okay. We said in the mission of a Shoyl and a Shloiman, we said that you're allowed to inquire after the welfare of Goyim, or you should inquire after their welfare. Now, so the Yerushalmi that we said before, as Tosfos said, understands that Shoyl and a Shloiman is part of the Machzik and Yidah of Kuchav Mashvias. That it means that during Shvias, you say to them something that you say to them congratulations and you say, do a good job and I'll buy it from you after. But here the Bavli is understanding that it's a separate statement, that there's a separate din that was shown b'shloim b'nei daka shalom. The question is, why do we need to say that? Hashtag zuki machzikinan. If you're telling us that we can even support them verbally and tell them good job, show them b'shloim b'boya, would we need to be told that you can ask after their welfare? Of course you could. The answer is Amar Abyeva, Le Nitzrucha El Yom Chagam. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is even on their Chagah, even on a Goyish festival. We're not concerned that saying Shalom to the Goy is going to make him so happy that he's going to go thank his Avodah Zarah for that. We don't have to be concerned about that. Detanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa. On the day of a Goyish holiday, a Yid is not allowed to go into a Goy's house and say Shalom to him, because that's really showing the Goy a lot of respect and a lot of honor, and therefore the Goy may be so pleased by that that he's going to go thank his Getchke, and that way you, the Yid, have been over on Lifnei Iver, causing him to worship Avodah Zarah more than he would have otherwise. But Motze instead, so you don't go into his house to say Shalom, but Motze Bashuk, if you meet up with a goy on the street on such a day, you are allowed to say Shalom to him, but you say it like weakly and seriously, like you do it in a way almost like you like the way an Ovo would greet somebody. So, but the point is, you are allowed to say Shalom to them, and we're not concerned that he's going to then go and thank his Getchke for that. So since we're talking about saying Shalom, so now the Gemara brings a contrasting story. Here we were talking about not saying Shalom twice to a goy. Now we have the opposite when it comes to Talmid Chachamim. And this piece of Gemara especially fits nicely according to the Meiri, who says the reason why you shouldn't say Shalom twice to a goy or any kind of thing, or any kind of greeting twice, is because you're going to be inappropriately close to him. But here by a Talmid Chacham, Adrama, you want to be close to a Talmid Chacham as possible. And therefore, as the Gemara is going to say, you should say Shalom twice to them. So the Gemara tells Rav Huna and Rav Chista havu yasvi. Rav Huna and Rav Chista were one time sitting together. Cholif ba'ozu gniva, and gniva came and passed by. Now gniva, we've had a couple of times in the Masechta already. He was a Talmud of Rav. He's mentioned here and there in halachas throughout Shas. But at the beginning of the Masechta, we had that he was causing trouble for Ma'ukva. He was harassing him and being a Baal Machlokas, and Ma'ukva is very upset about it, and he wants to even masu on Gniva to the government to get him to stop, and Rabbi Elazar tells him don't, and Rabbi Elazar tells him that you be patient, Hashem will deal with him, and eventually, it says in the Gemara over there on Zion Amun Aleph, eventually Gniva was arrested by the government. So we're going to have the end of his story is going to be later on Daf Samach Hei. We're going to talk about what happened with him in the end when he was arrested. But anyway, right now he was still around and right now he was still around and about. So he's walking by, and Rav Chista and Rav Huna and Rav Chista see him. So one of them says to the other, we had a similar story on Daf Lamed Aleph as well, also involving these two Chachamim and Gniva. So one of them said, we should stand up for him because it's Tamid Chacham. Omaloy, and the other one says, when we come with Pargon Nekum, you want us to stand up in front of a Baal Machlokas, you stand up in front of a Tamid Chacham, that's a Tamid Chacham who's acting the way he's supposed to, not this Gniva who's a Baal Machlokas, and is harassing Ma'ukva and not acting like the way a Tamid Chacham should act. In fact, so we had basically the same first half of the story over there. Marsha points out. So there we have, it doesn't mention anything about him saying Shalom over there, because there the Gemara just wants to get into a topic that we were talking over there about the different winds that come from different directions and the effects on them. Here the main point is we want to focus on the way he said Shalom to them. In other words, Marsha seems to understand that it's all one story. He came over to them and said Shalom. He was walking by. They're thinking, should we stand up for him? Should we not? Then he comes over and says Shalom to them twice, and they get into a discussion about that, as we're going to say in our Gemara. And then he asks them, so what have you been talking about? And they tell him about Ruchos, and then they have a discussion about that. So it would be two parts of the same story that the Gemara just splits up and tells each part in its appropriate place. Anyway, so Adahochi Osi Ihu Legavayu, so he came over to them. Omelu Shloma Aleichu Malchi, Shloma Aleichu Malchi. He says to them, Shalom Aleichem Kings, Shalom Aleichem Kings. Omrulay, so they ask him, Manolach Dirabon and Ikru Malachim, where do you get that Tamil Chachamim are called kings that you're calling us that? Omrulahu, he says, Dichdib bi Malachim yim loichu. Again, the Pasuk says, through me, the Torah, kings rule. So therefore, yes, so a Tamil Chacham who studies Torah is called a king. We have in Tirkei Avos, after all, we have that Gdola Torah, Yosem and Akunom and Amalchus. So yeah, this is where we get the expression "man malchi rabbanon." Who are the kings? Are the Talmid Chacham? And omru leyo menolach to kaflin and shalom le malchi. Where do you see this concept that you say twice shalom to a king, or in this case to a Talmid Chacham? Omru, he says, "The omer of Yehuda Amarav minayin shakoflin shalom le malach." How do we know that you say shalom twice to a king? Shenema, you have the posuk. We say it in and Motzei Shabbos in the Yitin Lacha, the Ruach Lov Shas Amosai Rosh HaShalushim Begomer. Previously in the Pasuk, it describes how when David is still hiding out from Shaul, at one point a contingent of people from Binyamin, led by Amosai, who was David's nephew from Shevet Yehuda, comes to see him, and David says, "What are you here for? Are you here to join my forces, or are you here to betray me to Shaul?" And the Ruach Lov Shas Amosai Rosh HaShalushim, a spirit from Hashem enclosed Amosai, the head of the captains, and he says to David, he continues over there, L'cha David v'incham and Yishai, Shalom, Shalom l'cha v'shalom la'azrecha, peace, peace to you, and peace to your helpers. So, and then the pasuk says that David took them into his group and made them heads of the unit over there, right? The point is, we see that Amosai said twice, Shalom, Shalom Lecha, and David, at that, he's acknowledging David as the legitimate king of the Jewish people. So therefore, we see from that you say Shalom twice to a king. Maharsha explains the symbolism of it is that a king is supposed to make shalom here on earth, and a Talmud Chacham, a regular person, makes shalom here on earth. A king or a Talmud Chacham is supposed to make shalom in the Pamalia Shamayla or Pamalia Shamata, in Shamayim, among the Malachim in Shamayim, and on earth. So therefore, a Talmud Chacham and a king are supposed to be told shalom twice. And Maharsha also adds that what Amosai is saying, he says further in the pasuk, "Ki azorcha elekecha," Hashem is helping you, meaning he's saying to David in the previous pasuk, you're asking, are you coming to help me? You should realize, David, you don't need us to help you. "Ki azorcha elekecha," Hashem is helping you. Okay, so that's where we say shalom twice to a king. Amri levite marmidi, they said, come, Rebbe, taste something. He says, no. A person is not allowed to even taste anything until he gives food to his animals. And only then, Hashem says, I'll give grass in the fields for you animals. And only then does it say, you will eat and you'll be satisfied. So you have to feed your animals first. Now, there are Rishonim who have the girsa, not sheyitim, but rather sheyoichal. So according to that, it would mean you'd be allowed to eat something, you just wouldn't be allowed to have a full meal. But here the Gersa is Shiyitim, that he's not even allowed to taste anything. There are details in that, and they discuss, for example, does that apply only to work animals? Does it also apply to pets? There's also the interesting point that Sefer Chassidim says that's as far as food. As far as drinks, people come first, as we find in Parshas Chukas, Vishkisa Se'eda Ves Be'iram, that we find that Hashem tells Moshe, bring water from the rock, and you'll give water to the people and to their animals. You also find by the Yezer, Eved Avraham, that he gave, that Rivka gave water first to him and then to the camels. So water or drinks come first for people, but food comes first for animals, as the Gemara is saying over here. Hadran aloch anizachim. Now this next perek ha'omer on Omid Beis. Now we're getting back to topics of gittin. Back in the fourth perek on Daf Lamed Beis, we started with the dinim of shluchos and gittin. Then we digressed to talk about things mepnei tikkun ha'olam, because we had over there when the husband is able and not able. When the husband is no longer able to be mevatel the get because of a takana of Rav Gamliel, which was mipnei tikkun ha'olam, because of a takana of Rav Gamliel azaken, mipnei tikkun ha'olam. So that led us into a whole bunch of other things that are mipnei tikkun ha'olam and mipnei dakei shalom. Now we're getting back to matters of shlichus in gittin. An interesting thing is, it seems that Rashi had, and the Rosh definitely has, the next perek, Misha Ochzai, which we have as the seventh perek, Rashi seems to have had, and the Rosh definitely had that as the sixth perek. However, Tosfos explains over here that the order that we have is more fitting, because now we're getting back to matters of Shlichus that we interrupted early in the fourth perek. Then after that comes in our perek, we're going to talk about a case where a husband says to two or three people, write a get for me and my wife. And then afterwards, then you have Misha Ochzai, which also talks about a case where a person is saying to people to write a get. And the question is, there is he of completely sound mind to do that? And then after that, you have the rest of the perekim, as opposed to according to Rashi's and the Rosh's order, then the next perek, Misha Ochzai, would be a little bit out of place. Anyway, So now in our perek, we're going to deal with the dinim of shlichus as far as gittin. Now we have to keep in mind there are three kinds of shliach that we're going to be dealing with. There is shliach halacha, which is the husband appoints a shliach to bring the get to his wife. That shliach is standing in place of the husband. In other words, the same way in a normal situation, the husband hands his wife the get. In this case, the shliach takes the get and hands it to the wife, and it's considered as though it's coming from the husband. That's a shliach halacha. Then you have the opposite of that is called shliach kabbalah. The opposite number to that is a shliach kabbalah, which is a shliach that the wife appoints to receive the get on her behalf. And when the shliach kabbalah receives the get, it's considered as though the wife received it and therefore it takes effect. Then you have sort of in between them, you have what's called shliach hava, which is also a shliach that's appointed by the wife, but his job is not that as soon as he receives the get, then it takes effect. Rather, his job is to bring the get from the husband or from his shliach to the wife, but only when he brings it to her is it going to take effect. So shliach halacha is appointed by the husband, a shliach kabbalah and a shliach hava are appointed by the wife. So here we're going to start talking about the various kinds of shluchim and what the dinim are with each one of them. So the Mishnah says, "Ha'omer hiskabo get zel ishti." A husband says to a shliach, "Receive this get for my wife." Now the husband can't appoint a shliach kabbalah because the husband can only appoint a shliach halacha. Therefore, when he says hiskabo get zel ishti, he hasn't yet made that get. He hasn't actually been mizaka the get to the wife yet. Now, it's not a schus for her because a get is a choiv for her because after all, when she receives the get, when the get takes effect, then she loses mezonos, she loses support and so forth for her husband. So the get has not taken effect yet by the husband telling the shliach, bring this get to my wife. In fact, the Rashba brings based on the Yerushalmi. Now, you could have a case, for example, where the wife really does want to get divorced. She's saying explicitly, I want it. Nevertheless, there is always the concern that maybe she changed her mind or something. Anyway, so the husband says, Iskabel get zel ishti, oy hoylach get zel ishti, or he says, bring this get to my wife. Either way, if he wants to change his mind and decide not to divorce her, then he can do that because the get has not yet taken effect. And you can't say he's mezakeh through somebody else because, again, it's not a schus for her. Generally speaking, a get is a choiv for her. And even if you have the particular case where he or she wants to be divorced, nonetheless, we still consider it a choiv because she may change her mind or something. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, ha'isha sha'omre hiskabel ligiti, but if the wife said to a shliach, receive my get for me, meaning that she appointed somebody a shliach kabbalah, and the husband gave the get to that shliach kabbalah, imrotz lachzer lo yachzer, now once the husband gave it to the shliach kabbalah, he can't change his mind, because this is a shliach kabbalah. As soon as he receives the get, it takes effect. So therefore, now it's too late for the husband to change his mind once he gave it to him. So lefichach, now therefore, what should the husband do if he still wants to leave himself an out and to change his mind? So if a shliach kabbalah came, im omalai habal e efshishit a kabbalah elaholach vatenla, if the husband says to the shliach kabbalah, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, I don't want to give it to you as a shliach kabbalah, elaholach vatenla, instead, I am making you into a shliach halacha, you can be my shliach to bring it to her. So then he still has the ability to change his mind because now what he's done is he's undone. He's saying, you were a shliach kabbalah until now, but I am undoing that and I am overriding that and making it that now you're only a shliach halacha. So that would work. But if he leaves him as a shliach kabbalah and gives him the get, then at that point it's too late for him to change his mind. Reb Shimon Gamliel Oymer, after I met us totally gitti, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, also, even if she doesn't appoint a shliach kabbalah, even if she appoints a shliach hava, so she's saying, bring me my get, then it's also imrotz lachzer lo yachzer, then the Reb Shimon Gamliel says also, if the husband gives that shliach the get, he wouldn't be able to change his mind, even though the guy is not a shliach kabbalah. The get takes effect only when she receives it, but because she made the shliach and said totally gitti, then Reb Shimon Gamliel would say the husband can't change his mind either, and the only way he could is if to begin with, before he gives the get, he says you're no longer a shliach halacha, you're a shliach hava. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Acha Brei Rav Ibi Yelon Rav Ashi. Now, what are we saying in the beginning of the Mishnah? That when the husband says, Holach get zeh l'ishti, the reason why, so he's making him a shliach halacha. Why are we saying he's able to change his mind? Or for that matter, in the first words, his skabel get zeh l'ishti. So he says his skabel, which is a lashon of Kabbalah, but because the wife didn't appoint him, and only the wife can appoint a shliach Kabbalah. By the way, the Gemara in Kiddushin learns these various details from Psukim, how we know the husband can appoint a shliach, how we know this woman can appoint a shliach on her behalf, etc. Anyway, so he's saying because she didn't appoint that shliach, because the husband said, Hoylach get zeh l'ishti, the husband can't make a shliach kabbalah, and the wife only and the husband only made him a shliach halacha. So we're saying the wife did not make him a shliach kabbalah. Shaviti is shliach kabbalah. The wife had not made him a shliach kabbalah. Ha shaviti is shliach kabbalah. It sounds like though, if the wife had made the shliach kabbalah and the husband says hoylach, so he didn't actually. It wasn't like later in the Mishnah where he says, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, I want you to be a shliach halacha. He or the husband doesn't just say anything like that. He just says the shliach comes as a shliach kabbalah from the wife. The husband says hoylich, and was saying, it sounds like rotzalach so lo yachso. It sounds like in that case also, the husband can't change his mind. So when he says, when the husband says on his own, hoylich gets on the ishti, then he can change his mind. But it sounds like, if the wife had said, you be makabel my get, you be a shliach kabbalah, and the husband gives it to the shliach and says, hoylich, then at that point, he couldn't change his mind anymore. And Tosfos says, then the reason would be, so why would the Mishnah be saying his skabel is saying that when the husband says his skabel implies that the wife didn't say anything to him to begin with, because if he comes and presents himself and says, I'm shliach kabbalah, there's no reason for the husband to say his skabel. And therefore, the same thing would be by hoylich. Also, it means that she never said anything. So, shmamina hoylich kazochi dami. Does that show then that saying to, which was a point that we learned earlier in the Masechta, that when you say to somebody hoylich, bring this to somebody, then it's the equivalent of saying zechi. It's the equivalent of saying be zoche in it on her behalf. Which back on Daf Yudalit in the first parak, we learned a machlokas about that, whether that works. So we talked about them there in Dine Mominus. So for example, Reuven owes Shimon money, let's say, and he sends with a shliach, and he says, Hoylich, bring this money to Shimon. Does that amount to that the shliach has acquired it on behalf of Shimon, because Zochen la'odim shalei b'fanav, and now Reuven can't take it back? Or not, do we say that Hoylich is lav kischi dami, and therefore Reuven could still change his mind and take it back? Here in our Mishnah, the implication seems to be Hoylich kischi dami, because we're saying that if the wife said you be a shliach kabbalah, and the husband says Hoylich, so that's enough to be zurcha on behalf of the wife. The answer is loy, not necessarily. You could say that a hoylach is not generally like a zchi. Hiskabel get l'ishti itzrichalei. So rather, not like Tosfos had said that the word hiskabel is only there to say that hiskabel and hoylach are similar with the wife not having appointed anybody. Rather, the Mishnah has mentioned the word hiskabel deliberately. Because the Mishnah is saying Hoylach gets el ishti, where she didn't appoint anybody, and it's mentioning that to go with the din of his skabel ligit. Where's the sakudai nechamina? Now, when the husband said his skabel, Hoyl baal lavar shavi shliach kabbalahu, given that the husband is not able to make a shliach kabbalah, because a shliach kabbalah is standing in place of the wife, and so obviously the husband can't appoint a shliach on behalf of the wife. So given that, when the husband says his skabel, then afagav the mota gita liyodo loyla heve gita, you would think that when the husband says his skabel, then maybe it shouldn't work even when the get reaches the wife, because maybe we would say that she didn't appoint any shliach. The husband had not appointed the valid kind of shliach. And he didn't say the word hoylich, he said his skabel. So you would think that maybe in that case, nobody's done anything the way they should, so maybe the get shouldn't work. Kamash Malon, therefore the Mishnah is telling us, his skabel, the hoylich ka'amar, that the word his skabel means his skabel received this get, and implicitly it also means hoylich, bring it to her. So now the Mishnah is saying, in other words, that whether he said his skabel, which implies hoylich, or whether he explicitly said hoylich, either way, the guy is a shliach halacha, And when he brings the get to the wife, then he's standing in the place of the husband, and therefore the get will take effect. So not like we thought that the Mishnah is implying anything about whether the wife appointed the shliach or not. No, we're talking strictly the husband appointed. But the point is, we would have thought that if the husband uses the word hiskabel, maybe it's no good, and therefore the Mishnah is telling us hiskabel works because it implies hoylach. And the same thing if he said hoylach explicitly. Okay, the Mishnah says tnan. Well, let's look at the continuation of our Mishnah. And see whether it fits better according to the opinion that holach kizchi dom yona. The Mishnah had continued. Isha she'omri skabel ligiti. We said when the wife says receive my get for me, so she's appointing a shliach kabbalah. Again, that shliach stands in her place and is considered. Once that shliach receives that get, then the get takes effect. So the Mishnah says imrotz lachso layachser. So if after the husband gives the shliach kabbalah the get, then he can't change his mind. My love, loishna kabbalah, loishna halacha. Shouldn't we assume that the Mishnah is referring back to the Reisha? So whether the husband, so the wife did appoint a shliach kabbalah, and now whether the husband tells the shliach his skabel or whether he tells him hoylich, then either way it would work. So that must be hoylich kizchi dami. Otherwise, if you said hoylich lav kizchi dami, the husband didn't give it to the shliach intending for it to take effect right away. The guy comes and says, I'm a shliach kabbalah. The husband says, hoylich, which implies, in other words, doesn't that imply that he's saying, I don't want it to take effect right away? If still the Mishnah says he can't change his mind, that must mean nevertheless it does take effect right away. Why? Because hoylich is chidami. So wouldn't that prove that? The answer is loy, a kabbalah, not necessarily. That case may be referring only to when the husband says his skabel. So in other words, the event would have been over here. The wife says, I'm making you a shliach kabbalah. The guy comes to the husband and says, I'm a shliach kabbalah. The husband says, fine, his skabel, receive this get, and as soon as you receive it, it'll take effect. Now he gave it to the wife. Now he gave it to the shliach. Now he can't change his mind. Not necessarily, though, if the husband in that scenario instead had said hoylich, not necessarily would the Mishnah be implying that the husband can't change his mind. Maybe by saying hoylich, in effect, he's saying, I don't want you to be zoche in it yet on her behalf until she actually receives it. And that would be hoylich lav kizchidami. So you can't prove from the Mishnah one way or the other. Okay, Toshma, let's look at the continuation of the Mishnah. If the husband says explicitly, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah, rather I want to change your shlichus and make you a shliach halacha. So then, then the Mishnah says he could still change his mind. Now, the implication is, if he says holach betenla, then he can still change his mind because he made him only a shliach holacha, and therefore the get does not take effect yet until it reaches her. So time of the omi efshi. So the implication in the Mishnah seems to be because the husband explicitly said efshi, I do not want this get to take effect until she receives it. Then therefore, so we're saying that doesn't work yet. But the implication seems to be that if he didn't actually say that explicitly, he just said holach betenla, then imrotzalachso layachso. It sounds like if he wants to change his mind at that point, he can, because it just means that. So he came as a shliach kabbalah. The husband didn't explicitly say, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah. He's just saying holach, and was saying it works. Wouldn't that show that holach is the equivalent of schi? Otherwise, he would have to say, otherwise, the husband wouldn't even have to say, I don't want you to be a shliach kabbalah. Just saying holach amounts to saying that I'm giving it to you, but it doesn't take effect until she receives it. So only if we say holach kizchi dami would we understand the Mishnah on the face of it. The Gemara answer is no, because dilma behelach, because maybe the Mishnah does not mean holach v'tenla, maybe the Mishnah means helach. Here it is, and give it to her. So he's not saying anything about halacha or not. He's just saying, halach, here it is, and I'm giving it to you. Now, Tosfos says the Gemara is not actually trying to change the wording of the Mishnah. The Gemara is just saying that there was some chachamim who had a version of the Mishnah that said halach. Now, why are we talking not changing the wording? Sometimes we do. For the fact is, sometimes we do find where the Gemara will edit a Mishnah and point out that the wording of it is incorrect. So Mao Shah says that later on, we're going to have in the Gemara on Daf Samach Gimel, we're going to use the Gemara is going to mention over there. Aren't we talking about that the Mishnah said a halach, and then there's a contradiction from that? So if we're actually editing the Mishnah, then what's the question? Just don't edit the Mishnah and don't have the question. So therefore, that's why Tosfos wants to understand that we're not actually changing the wording of the Mishnah. We're just saying there were different versions of the Mishnah going around, and one of them said instead of halach, said halach, which means therefore that he's telling him you take it and bring it to her. There's different other points that different other Mephoshim talk about why Maharam Shif says also if the Gemara actually meant to say that the wording of the Mishnah as we have it is wrong and it should say Halach, then the Gemara's expression shouldn't be Dilma Ba'oimah Halach, it should be Tony Halach, read the Mishnah that it says Halach. Okay, so no proof of the other, from one way or the other from the Mishnah about whether Halach is Chidami or not. Now let's talk about some dinim of who's able to be what kind of shliach. Pshita isha havi shliach leilocha. It's obvious to start with that a man can be a shliach leilocha. Shekain baal melech get leishte, because after all, the husband himself would be able to give the get to his wife. So therefore, another man can stand in his place and be a shliach for the same thing. Given that the whole concept of shlichus, we learn from the fact that it says in the Torah, v'shilcha mibesoi, where the Gemara in Kedushin explains that it could have said v'shilach, and instead it says v'shilcha, and from there we learn the concept of shlichus, so it means that a man like him can do it. Similarly, isha have a shliach kabbalah. Similarly, a woman can be a shliach kabbalah appointed by the wife. She can isha kabbalah get to me abayla, because by the same token, a wife herself can receive her get directly from the husband. Therefore, she can appoint a woman to be her shliach instead. What about isha kabbalah v'isha lohi locha mai? What about can a man be a shliach kabbalah or a woman be a shliach locha? Now, we do have, earlier in the Masechta, we learned you can even have a case where the wife herself brings her get as a shliach halacha and says, b'fani nechta, b'fani nechta. At this point, the Gemara has not taken that into consideration yet. So would it be allowed? So Toshma, let's look at our Mishnah. Ho'im hiskabo get zelishti. We said a husband says to somebody, receive this get from my wife. Oy ho'ilach get zelishti, or bring this get to my wife. Im rotza lachzer yachzer. If he wants to change his mind, we said he still could, because the get hasn't taken effect yet. But ha'isha sha'omu hiskabo ligishti. But if the wife says, receive my get for me, or im rotza lachzer lo yachzer, then the husband can't change his mind. Now, my lab b'chad shliach. Shouldn't we assume that all these cases of the Mishnah are talking about the same shliach? So the husband says to him, hoylach or hiskabel, or the same person, the woman could have said to him, hiskabel, which would mean that the same person could be either a shliach halacha or shliach kabbalah, or shmamina koshala kabbalah koshala halacha. Well, and that would tell us anybody who could be a shliach kabbalah can be a shliach halacha. The Gemara answer is not loy b'shnei shluchim. No, it could be two different groups, two different people. The first part of the Mishnah is talking about the husband saying to a man. The second part is talking about the wife saying to a woman. Okay, Toshma, let's continue in the Mishnah. If the husband says, I don't want you to receive it for her to be a shliach kabbalah, ela holach v'tenla, but rather be a shliach halacha and give it to her, im rotza lachzer yachzer, there we say he can change his mind. Now, v'hohocha d'chad shliachu, here obviously it's one shliach, because the wife appointed him a shliach kabbalah, and now the husband is turning him into a shliach halacha, o shmamina koshala kabbalah, koshala halacha. So therefore, we see from that anybody who's kosher as a shliach kabbalah is also kosher as a shliach halacha. Good. Pshoit mina isha v'shliach kabbalah. So therefore, fine. We can answer from that a man can be a shliach kabbalah because therefore, so he can be a shliach halacha. Therefore, he can also be a shliach kabbalah. So now we have a different way of proving actually that a husband could be a that a man can be a shliach kabbalah. Because she can't have mekabel get b'tektana, because after all, a father can be a shliach to receive a get on behalf of his daughter when she's a ktana or a naira, for that matter, where their her kedushin were fully valid daraisa because her father was mekamisher, and the father can receive her get on her behalf. So therefore, we see a man can be a shliach kabbalah. So that's a different way of proving that he could. But what about isha lo hilacha tibor lach mai? We still have the question though. What about can a woman be a shliach hilacha? And the answer is, Omar Amari, Toshma, we can prove from a Mishnah earlier in our Masechta, af hanoshim she'en nemonis lo mesbaila. We said you have five kinds of women who we assume that they don't like a certain woman. We have, for example, her mother-in-law, her sister-in-law, the different kinds of sister-in-law, whether married to her brother or whether they're two, whether they're married to two brothers or whether it's her husband's sister. Either kind, you have her stepdaughter, etc. So we said, we learned in Yevamos that such women generally don't like the woman in question, and therefore, for example, they're not allowed to say Eidos that her husband died, because we're concerned that they may be saying false Eidos, so that she'll rely on them and remarry and then get in trouble when the husband turns up. But the Mishnah says, Afam Nashim She'en Nehem Monas Lo Mesbaila, even these women who we don't trust them to say that the husband died, and Nehem Monas Lohavias Gita, we do believe them to bring the get, because they have a get with them, and we're not concerned that they went and forged a get. So v'hasim halacha. He said there it's a shliach halacha, and we see that a woman can bring it. Therefore, that shows that yes, a woman can be a shliach halacha. Amar Rav Ashi mi sefer nami shma mina. You can also see it from the sefer, from the continuation of that same mishnah. The katoni sefer ha'isha atzma mivias gita. The wife herself can bring the get from the dinas hayam as a shliach. Where she has to say v'ukimna b'halacha, we explain when we learned that previously on Daf Chaf Dalad, we explained that the husband made her a shliach for her own get. So the husband tells her, I don't want the get to take effect right away. When I'm giving it to you, I want you to bring it to such and such a beis din, and you tell them b'fanenechtam, and then they will take it from you and give it to you on my behalf. So therefore, we see also that she's a shliach halacha, and therefore you see that it works for a shliach halacha to be a woman. So the Gemara says, good, shmamina, that shows it. So yes, either a man or a woman can be either a shliach kabbalah or a shliach halacha. Shkoyach, everyone.